Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. From the GE20 talks on Friday to the halls of the Federal Reserve, Treasury, and Congress, there is plenty of talk about reining in executive pay at American banks on Wall Street. It's key, many say, to limiting the kind of risk-taking that triggered the financial crisis. Sounds good, but it's tricky at many levels. It's stoutly opposed by plenty on Wall Street, and it quickly leads to accusations of stifling the capitalist spirit. This hour, On Point, Washington and Wall Street pay after the crash. Joining me now from New York is Gretchen Morgenson, Pulitzer Prize-winning financial journalist for The New York Times. She's both a columnist and editor there, and she's editor of the new book, The Capitalist's Guide. Gretchen, thanks for joining us.
Anytime. How are you?
Pretty good. And we're looking out on all this talk about limiting Wall Street pay. I wish you'd take us in just from the start with Paul Volcker, former Fed chairman, said recently that one of the causes of the financial crisis was, quoting him, the ultimately explosive combination of compensation practices that provided enormous incentives to take risks. And off we went, ultimately, to a kind of catastrophe. I know there's not agreement on this, but what's the argument that executive pay is important not just as a window dressing issue, but as one of the planks that need to be confronted to get the economy back on a better footing, Gretchen?
Well, Tom, I think that Paul Volcker is really an unquestionable authority on all things having to do with banking and regulation. So when he says something like this and as powerful and as strongly worded as it was, I think that he should be listened to. Mm. I think that what he's essentially saying is that during the boom period where we had very low interest rates and where mortgages were given out to anyone who had a pulse, that, you know, it really did sort of there was an incentive system created where immediate gratification, that is a bonus for this year's work, for this year's numbers, for this year's trades, for this year's mortgages put on the books, those kinds of bonuses really encouraged people to put loans on their books that really had no way of being repaid. They were very risky, very reckless, but they made an immediate commission or an immediate contribution to a bonus. Now, we all know what happened subsequently to those loans when they started to fail. The people who had made them, the people who'd put them on the books, were sort of had all left the scene with their piles of money. And there's just something really unfair about that, particularly when the taxpayer has to step in and, pay back these loans or at least back them.
So from that came the phrase that we heard bandied about, IBG, YBG, I'll be gone and you'll be gone by the time the chickens come home to roost, and gone with the millions. But as you say, taxpayer, hundreds of billions, bailed it all out. There's a lot of talk about this. Now, let's just start with the G20. Everyone was listening last week over the weekend. You know, in their final communique, they say they're close to broad agreement on curbing banker pay. What does that mean?
Well, I think one of the things that it means is that we have to put a longer-term perspective on some of the pay packages. We can't have a system where the short-term gains or the short-term, practices are really rewarded as they were during this most recent period. And so, people will disagree on how to do that precisely, but I think that it has to be done so that you as a banker or as an executive at a financial services firm have some stake in the long-term performance of whatever it is you're doing, whether it's putting mortgages on your books or whether it's trading securities, as many Wall Street firms do. You have to have an incentive to make sure that whatever your business is, that it has long-term positive impacts. And we certainly did not see that during the most recent period.
At the G20, the French leader Sarkozy had threatened to walk out if there wasn't something done on executive compensation. But the fact that they got to some broadly worded agreement was interpreted by a lot of people, as I'm sure you know, Gretchen, as a victory for a different view from the United States. Sarkozy wanted actual caps. That's not the language in the G20 agreement. So what's the U.S. pushing for here?
Well, it's interesting. You know, this is an interesting sort of scenario. The Europeans have for years lagged on our executive pay levels. I mean, they do not reward their executives to the same degree that we do in this country. And so I'm not surprised at all that Europe would be, far more aggressive, and European leaders would be far more aggressive about trying to rein in executive pay. I'm sure that they took a look at some of what, Americans were making and just, were astounded, particularly when the Americans really were sort of at the heart of breaking the bank, as it were, with these mortgage practices. So I think it's a twofold kind of payback, if you will. But, I think what Americans have learned, unfortunately, is that when the Congress gets involved in trying to set limits on pay, what ultimately happens is that people figure out a way to get around those limits. And in fact, they often end up making the problem worse. There's an example that goes back to 1993 when President Clinton in Congress put in a cap on salaries at $1 million. Well, this created the incredible rush to issue stock options.
This is to Wall really, Street execs and traders.
Well,
and so
to everyone, actually, to corporate America at large. And so what happened was you had a cap on salary that then all of the money or much of the money that went to these folks was in the form of stock options, which had a cost but was not as evident. And if you close the door, they open the window. If you close the window, they open the door.
We're going to walk down through the Federal Reserve proposal, what's coming out of Treasury, out of Congress. But is it clear what the White House thinks on this front? I'm looking at an interview from September 14th where the President, Obama, said, "Why is it that we're going to cap executive compensation for Wall Street bankers but not Silicon Valley entrepreneurs or NFL football players?" Where does the White House stand? Is it clear, Gretchen?
Well, I think we've gotten a couple of mixed messages here. I mean, early on, when the bonuses that were paid to executives at AIG, the insurance company that the taxpayer has had to backstop to the tune of $170 billion, there was a great hue and cry and an uproar over bonuses that were paid to the individuals in the unit that really created the huge problem for AIG. And I think that you had the president come out and say that these were outrageous. And, it's an easy issue to discuss sort of in the populist fervor, but it is difficult when you get down to brass tacks to try to figure out precisely how to do the right thing to rein in these practices. And again, we've had this experience with government where when they do try to rein it in, they create another problem. So, I think his message most recently has been, let's slow down a little bit here, whereas initially it was more of outrage.
We'll look at what's being proposed, but what about the banks themselves? Have they taken steps to limit this kind of the Wall Street pay, or the contrary since the crash?
I think that the banks have been, lobbying very strenuously to make sure that there is very little done to their entire business model. And I think that this would also include executive pay. I think that what must be done is that boards of directors have to be on alert and have to really feel that they will be held accountable if something like this were to happen again. I mean, you had a situation, for example, at Merrill Lynch, where they were putting on these toxic assets onto the balance sheet at huge rates and just ballooning the balance sheet and ballooning the risks to the company. And it does not appear that the board of directors had any clue about what was going on there. Now, if those people are held accountable for this kind of debacle, you can be sure that they would be a lot more careful and scrutinize these things more cautiously, it seems.
Do you think it's coming? A week ago or so, Wall Street Journal headline, "Bankers Face Sweeping Curbs on Pay." Really?
Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. I think that what would be more sensible is to get this going from the ground up, as I say, where the actual shareholders, fiduciaries, i.e. the directors, step up and say, okay, we need to rein this in. We need to have executives with a long-term incentive pay perspective so that the immediate grab for the gusto type of belief system goes by the boards. Directors have to lead that charge. They, after all, are representing the owners of the companies, and they must act strongly against executives who really want to have the take the me first attitude.
But if that didn't happen before the crash that we're still going through, why will it happen now? You'd think there'd be an object lesson there, but you've written about how close those directors and the executives they were overseeing have been for so many years.
Again, it's very complicated, but I think that the beginnings of something like a revolt may be taking place, where shareholders are finally acting and voting against directors to the degree that they can. As you know, Tom, these elections for directors of public companies are sort of shams because you cannot vote them out, but you can represent to them that you're unhappy with their performance. And this is embarrassing, and some companies have agreed that if a director does not receive 50% of the vote in an annual election, that then that director will resign and, be replaced. So there is more of a, threat hanging over these people's heads than ever before, but we still need much more power.
Barack Obama's been talking about the whole thing. He was on Wall Street on September 14th, the anniversary of the Lehman Brothers collapse, talking broadly about responsibility and bloated bonuses.
We will not go back to the days of reckless behavior and unchecked excess that was at the heart of this crisis, where too many were motivated only by the appetite for quick kills and bloated bonuses. Those on Wall Street cannot resume taking risks without regard for consequences, and expect that next time American taxpayers will be there to break their fall. And that's why we need strong rules of the road to guard against the kind of systemic risks that we've seen.
Gretchen Morgenson in New York. Here's the lead from a story in your paper about 9 days ago. The Federal Reserve and Treasury are preparing broad new rules that would force banks to rein in practices that made multimillionaires out of many financial executives during the housing bubble. So what are they considering? What would they do?
Again, I think that what they're trying to do is design packages that don't, reward this short-term, the quick kill that the president just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think there are any real hard and fast proposals out there yet. I think that we're just all muddling through at the moment, still trying to figure out what we can have agreement on. But again, I think we do have to address this short-termism. And I think one thing that could be done that would really, I think, put the fear of God in some of these folks is to try to claw back some of the pay that has gone out the door that proved to be so problematic.
How would that work?
Why not go after some of the people who took these bonuses based on, earnings or results that were then found to have been actually not true or, not solid, that turned out to be losses where they had thought that there were gains?
Do you mean even now, Gretchen, go back pre-2008 autumn and, after Lehman Brothers CEO had $184 million, in a few years there, or Bear Stearns, $163 million, or Countrywide, Angela Merrill Mozilla,
Lynch.
$471 million? go after
well,
that?
Well, now, some of those were stock sales, of course, which, you know, you can't go after. What mm-hmm. we're talking about here is bonuses, bonuses that were based on results that, you know, turned out not to be true. They were ephemeral. The gains turned to losses. You know, I think this is an area that really needs exploring. It can be done under, you know, if you change some of the pay packages so that if these kinds of problems emerge, you can claw back some of the compensation. Up until now, those clawbacks have really been fairly limited to if there is fraud uncovered at a company. So that's kind of kept them, you know, in the low single digits as far as how many times clawbacks have occurred. But if this were changed to include this kind of short-term grab for the easy buck, then I think you could have some real positive consequences.
But in the rearview mirror, do you think any of these executives at Merrill Lynch or you name it are really worried that the government might even now come back after those bonuses from before the crash?
No, I don't think they're worried at all. And this is part of what I get at and get really kind of exercised about is this lack of accountability. I mean, it's just absurd that the American taxpayer is on the hook for these failures that were perpetrated by others who walked away with a lot of money. Is there anything more unfair than that? I mean, that is just not how the American system is supposed to work. You're not supposed to privatize gains and socialize losses.
You have written just last month, though, about a study that came out finding that instead of going to more long-term compensation perspective, it's the short-term that's still really, really in gear, in fact, growing again.
This was a study of what I wrote about by a independent compensation consultant who studied really some of the most recent changes in the pay packages, and it was quite disturbing, and I think that's the main reason I wanted to highlight it was that we really, here you would think that there would be some, you know, sense of shame or whatever you want to call it, or let's get down to business that is really solid and where we're, you know, doing the right thing for all of our stakeholders, and let's take a longer-term approach to pay. Well, this study found that, in fact, the alternative is what's going on, that the short-term pay is increasing in size as a percentage of the package.
How does the so-called pay czar figure into this? Kenneth Feinberg, who oversaw compensation after 9/11, is in the middle of this. Now, beyond Wall Street even, is he a key player here?
Well, he is going to be bringing out his, I think, rules of the road shortly. He was supposed to, I think, emerge with these in October. I think he is going to come out a little bit early. I think I saw a news story last week about this. So people are waiting to see what his, you know, guidelines will be and what his rules will be. Now, keep in mind, he really, I think, only oversees TARP recipients and, you know, people in that, the banks that have received the, you know, great amounts from the taxpayers. So mm-hmm. he would not have anything to say about, you know, companies that are not on the receiving end from the government.
Let me take a call and then get another perspective here from Bowling Green, Kentucky first. Jeremy, you're on the air. Jeremy, hi.
Hello.
You're on.
Oh, hi. Yes. As far as the issue, I do think it is kind of arrogant of these companies to have believed that they would have been able to keep this going for as long as they did. I don't think that we should really be held, as taxpayers, be held accountable for their mistakes. However, we also have a social obligation to help them out to make sure that we can get our economy back on track. But I really do think there should have been some sort of sanction put in place a long time ago to make sure that this didn't happen.
Are you confident, Jeremy, that these companies, their boards of directors, will do that themselves on the other side of the crash, on this side?
I really don't think that they are. There are some few that most likely will, but on the larger majority of them probably won't. They'll do just enough to stay under the radar and continue doing their businesses as the usual.
Jeremy, thanks for calling. Let me get a voice in here from Los Angeles right now. Kevin Murphy, he's chair of the Department of Finance and Business Economics at the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business. He testified before the House Financial Services Committee in June on executive pay and risks to the financial system. He's got maybe a more conservative view. Kevin Murphy, thanks very much for joining us.
Yep. Hi, Tom. Hi, Gretchen.
Hey, Kevin.
You know that there's anger out there. You testified about it over the bonuses that we all saw and what came after. Political pressures, you told the congressman, as if they didn't know, I guess, have escalated to do something. But you're arguing against kind of oversight or controls that would make organizations uncompetitive. You say why?
Well, part of this, I suppose, would even go back to what Gretchen said earlier, which is that whenever Congress gets involved in executive compensation, they make things worse rather than better, and this will be no exception. My impression, just from that testimony and from the hearing, is that we have a lot of angry congressmen, maybe angry for good reason, but we shouldn't make policy decisions when we're angry.
But we're angry because we've bailed out these banks after so many top Wall Street people made so many millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions for so many years. Do you think that's going to change on this side of the crash? Do you even buy the argument that, as Paul Volcker says, that compensation helped fuel this combustible situation that led to the crash?
I think that to the extent that compensation played a role in the, for example, the subprime meltdown, it played a very minor role. If you look at all the different culprits, the loose monetary policies of the Fed, the social policies on home ownership, mostly coming out of Congress, the now the too big to fail guarantees. If you look at the financial innovations poorly implemented, the securitization, exotic mortgages, collateralized debt obligations. Perhaps what was going on in the ratings agencies. Those all played first-order effects on the subprime meltdown. I don't buy the short-termism role, or let me put it a different way. There's certainly no evidence that has directly linked the pay policies for executives at these banks to excessive risk-taking. I can see the circumstantial evidence as long as everyone else, which is the bonuses are big.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can also see that there were some bonuses for lower-level bank employees that were rewarding people for writing loans rather than for writing loans that people might actually pay back. That's a performance measurement problem that was just motivated by our social policy and actually this outlook that home prices aren't going to fall.
Gretchen Morgenson, how about it? This idea of executive compensation, Wall Street pay is sort of small potatoes compared to other big things. And it's not just, I mean, Kevin Murphy's kind of on the conservative side of analysis here, but Dennis Kucinich, congressman out of Ohio, calling the Fed's move here a play at populism, you know, playing the executive compensation card. He said it's in a deck of cards that's kind of like the two of clubs here. What do you say?
That's funny. Well, I agree it's one piece of this puzzle, but I think it was a fairly significant piece. And it wasn't that – it was every step of the way. You had compensation issues from the very beginning from the mortgage broker who received more money the more poisonous the loan was. Yeah. I mean, literally. If the loan was a subprime loan with a prepayment penalty that remained in place for 3 years and that escalated to a very high level after that, he was paid more to make that loan, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Wall Street then paid more to buy that loan, to put it into a pool. Then an investor, you know, paid up to buy that part of the pool. So you see, every step of the way.
And the guy at the top who thought it all up went off with the mega bonus.
Yes. And so I believe that it may be in the aggregate, the numbers are nowhere near what, of course, the losses now are. But they did have these incentives. I think it's undeniable. So it's a piece of the puzzle. I agree completely about the whole housing policy as a big driver here. Certainly the rating agencies were either asleep at the switch or too eager to receive the pay that they would get when they rated structured finance products, which was significantly more lucrative than rating corporate bonds. You know, there were failures at every step of the way here, but I don't think we can say that compensation did not play a role.
Let's get a call from George in Burlington, Vermont. George, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I sit here as a long-term contributed to a 401k since the inception of it, Tom, and I know that it's always been a supplement and a risk. Mm-hmm. And I've expected people to manage my money in a prudent manner. You know, the term comes to, you know, power corrupts and power absolutely corrupts. There's no accountability here. We've even made the banks bigger. We've always heard too big to fail. Mm-hmm. Now the banks are even bigger. And I'm so seething that this whole there's no accountability. Nobody has made
it. George, you're breaking up, but we hear the phrase no accountability right there and the pain that comes with what happens to those 401ks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Kevin Murphy, how about it? I've seen the big critique somewhere that essentially Wall Street sat there in those years before the crash kind of harvesting the billions that Americans were trying to put away here, you know, skimming off too much off the top at great cost to the country. Do you think that will change now? Or if you think there shouldn't be government interference, is it just right back to the same old game?
Well, I'm certainly going to agree with Gretchen that real change has to start at the board level, and there's no question that compensation committees are feeling much more pressure than they have, and that they're feeling the same type of pressure that auditing committees felt in the wave of the accounting scandals of the early 2000s. But without wanting to sound too much of an advocate for the status quo, what often gets lost in the debate is realizing how these top executives at the banks were actually paid, and how much of their pay came in the form of stock and stock options that have deteriorated in value along with the market. For example, if we look at the TARP recipients, their bonuses fell 84% from 2007 to 2008. The value of their outstanding stock options fell by well over 90%. The value of their stock portfolios fell by well over 80%. These weren't executives that were only getting upside and did not face a downside.
Gretchen, these guys have been punished enough, layoff, and compensation committees will feel the pressure. Do you see evidence of that?
Well, as I said earlier, I think that we're going to start seeing more evidence of it. We have seen in the most recent proxy period where shareholders vote their shares. Usually this occurs during the spring months. We have seen more directors getting more negative feedback, i.e. People withholding their votes, withholding their support. That's the only way shareholders can act. They can't vote people out. We will see more and more of that, I think, in the in next year's elections, too. And I think that this is getting the attention of directors. Nobody likes to be on the receiving end of, you know, 40%, negative 50%, et cetera, feedback from the owners of the company. I think that has an impact. I'm no doubt about it.
But what about Kevin Murphy says, look, don't let's not pretend that these executives didn't pay. They did. The value of their stock fell dramatically. Of course, it's come back a lot, too, nevertheless.
Well, the value of their stock did fall, and they did have quite a bit of their wealth, I suppose, tied up in the stock. But, I mean, you have to remember that in the many, many years leading up to this, say from 2003, 4, 5, 6, you know, these people were just receiving tens of millions, if not more. So I'm not really going to bring out the violins for these people.
Kevin Murphy, you're sure it was enough? Paul Volcker saying, you know, the compensation was part of an explosive combination here. You don't buy it?
I believe that Mr. Volcker is an extremely talented macroeconomist and maybe even international finance expert, but I don't necessarily buy his expertise on compensation and incentives in organizations.
Keith is on the phone right now from Arlington, Massachusetts. Keith, you're on the air. What do you see?
Hello. I just want to make a comment that I think this discussion on the government controlling salaries is wholly inconsistent with government in a free society. If you looked at our writings of our founding fathers, some of the writings they based their opinions on, John Locke, life, liberty, property, these are sort of the foundations of freedom. And the government controlling salaries, it just has no basis there.
So then what do we do, Keith, after the kind of experience we've just had?
Well, the question would be, what happened, right? I think salaries are a red herring. You know, why were banks leveraged so highly? You know, and you have to look at things like the Basel rules, right? If you sold your own mortgages and bought mortgage-backed securities, you could change your leverage ratio 25 to 1 to 60 to 1. These were government policies. And so the question is, why were we doing that?
So why look at compensation when you say that the real issues are elsewhere? Let us pick it up. Gretchen, what about it? Inconsistent with the free society to have government looking in on compensation in the private sector.
Well, I certainly think that that's true. And, you know, as you point out, the sad thing is that now the taxpayer is on the hook for these mistakes. And, you know, that we do need some kind of way to feel that this is not going to happen again. And we need some process to make sure that it won't happen again. It is true. I mean, I could just imagine that if I wrote something that the government didn't like or the president didn't like, that then he'd start to say, oh, she should make less money. So, you know, I agree that the idea that the government getting involved is not an ideal one. But again, there's this feeling that we're helpless and that there's no accountability. And that's where you get to the need to really do something.
Kevin, if it's not the U.S. has essentially rejected caps, which some in Europe would go for. If it's not caps and it's not even federal oversight of compensation and having it geared long-term rather than short-term. I mean, are there any of these steps that you would vote for, Kevin? Or if not, then what?
Well, and I think I should distinguish the general private company from a company requiring special assistance from the government where taxpayers now are the major shareholders and the major debt holders of these companies. And there's a case to be made where we've got to protect taxpayers' interest in those companies. I think that
so you're with the Pazar on that. Do what you have to do to protect the taxpayer interest there once they've been bailed out.
While they're still wards of the, I think I heard someone call them taxpayer supported entities. And as long as they're still taxpayer supported entities, I think we do need to be concerned. What the Fed is doing, I think, sort of cleverly is they're trying to preempt what Congress might do. I don't know how to rank Congress in France on these two issues. I think both would like pay caps, but the Fed has proposed tying pay to longer-term measures of performance and imposing clawbacks in cases where the performance disappears or deteriorates later, and it's difficult to argue with either one of those positions, and I certainly endorse the fact that they have that the U.S. At least to this point have rejected the idea of caps.
Gretchen, what do you see coming from Congress if the Fed is looking at broader structures here? Do you see something more pointed coming out of Congress?
Well, I think that you probably will see something a little bit more of the caps-like measure. I think that it's an easy target. Obviously, I think it's more complex than many in Congress will have the time and energy to devote to it as far as solutions are concerned. And so, you know, I think the easy answer is, yes, let's just cap this, cap their salaries or cap something, and, you know, then we can move on to something else. I don't think that's the right response. I don't think that it gets at the problems. And, you know, unfortunately, I just think that the past experience that we have seen when Congress gets involved with pay have really just not been happy outcomes.
Do you think the Fed or Treasury Department can do better? And what about the sharing of responsibility there? Some are saying the Fed's getting too deep into these kind of issues with banks. They need to look at money supply. And anyway, they proved that they were not good guardians of the hen house before the collapse anyway.
Absolutely. I would be against the idea of giving the Fed broader new powers as an Uber regulator, because they did fall down on the job and proved that they were not interested in regulation of banking practices, which really made the system unsound and unsafe. They were more interested in monetary policy. I think that it might be better to think about this in terms of possibly the Treasury, because they are responsive then to the populace at large. The Fed is a very secretive organization. It does not want a lot of people sort of involved in its doings, and so I think for it to take on more powers is going to require that people it be more transparent, and I don't know that it's willing to do that.
We've got a comment online at onpointradio.org from Jimmy saying, you know, this is compensation control is more or less window dressing. What we need is real bank capitalization requirements and tough limits on leverage. Do you see this being discussed, Gretchen, as, you know, instead of getting at those more fundamental issues about bank leverage and exposure, or not?
I think that the executive pay issue is an easy issue. It's an easy one to understand. I mean, in the example of AIG, for instance, it was very easy to be outraged by bonuses taken by people at an institution that really drove off a cliff and you know, that required so much money from the taxpayer. But what is much harder to do is to make sensible responses and to provide a sort of framework for what we can do within the boundaries of, you know, our free market system that will actually encourage people to do the right thing going forward. That's a sort of longer term, requiring more sort of back and forth than just shouting about somebody's pay and, you know, saying it's not fair.
Kevin, do you see those deeper reforms coming here, or is that beyond your focus?
What I'm afraid about is, and this is consistent with Gretchen, is that the pay has been a distracting issue. The AIG case is the perfect example, where all the outrage was focused on the $168 million paid in retention bonuses, and we just lost sight of the fact that the government bailed out AIG for $170 billion. So only 1/1,000th of that went to the executives in bonuses, but that was where all the focus of the anger was.
But if Paul Volcker's right that helped create the situation that drove off a cliff, I mean, leverage works, right? If the incentives are wrong for the top guys at these firms, didn't that get us in trouble?
There are a lot of problems with executive compensation, and there are a lot of ways that executive compensation could cause excessive risk-taking. There are now scores of economists trying to establish a link between the structure of the payment systems and the risks that some of these banks took, and they've come up empty-handed so far.
We see where Volcker stands. Michael in Montreal, Canada. You're on the air, Michael.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was just wanted to say that during the 1960s, which were a very prosperous time in America, the average CEO earned about 40 times the base salary at his company. In Japan today, I think it's still about 20 times. So instead of a cap, why not set it so that the top earning person in a company can earn no more than, let's say, 100 times the lowest earning person? If he wants to increase his salary, fine, but let him not raid the till. Because if you think about how these CEOs got to be in a position where they're earning 1,000 times more than the salary of a brain surgeon, and they ended up ruining their company, is it because in effect they set their own salary and they just raided the till? So a regulation like that is just shareholder protection. That's how you get the justification for having the government involved. Just prevent them from raiding the till.
Shareholder protection. Michael, we'll pick that up, and I thank you for your call from Montreal. Let's get one from Mason City, Iowa. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think it's a much broader issue than just an economic issue. It's a political and cultural issue, in that these folks have tremendous, these corporations have tremendous leverage politically, and the view of we've taken to extreme the notion that we're exchanging the notion that they're entrepreneurs instead of managers, and they create fiefdoms within their organizations that are beyond accountability. I don't know, it's a license to steal in my own mind.
Paid like entrepreneurs, but in fact they're managers sitting on top of these institutions.
Yes, I heard, maybe it was on your show, a compensation mm-hmm. expert talking about folks at Citibank, that there were thousands of people paid over $500,000. You know, when you start to add up that up, and a totally poor performance for the culture, for the economy as a whole, you start to add it up, then it starts to show that inflation of wages, not just the top guys, but all the way down the line, it starts to look like, well, maybe that money just didn't disappear. Maybe that money has been skimmed. Maybe it has, in my mind, it's been stolen.
Paul, thanks for your call. Gretchen, a cultural problem here, Paul sees from Mason City. And Michael in Montreal saying, you know, the way out of the free society conundrum is shareholder protection.
Well, I think that both of those callers are getting at what we discussed a little bit ago, which is that the fiduciary duty of the board of directors of these companies is to serve the shareholder, and they are not serving the shareholder when they are dispensing enormous packages to, you know, in a sort of a cozy arrangement with the CEO. This is something that really has to be addressed and that shareholders really ought to get their Irish up about. I think we're starting to see that, but voting against directors who assign enormous pay packages and don't seem to be in tune with the current feelings and reality should you know, receive a lot of boos from shareholders.
Let's get a call from New York, Long Island. Terry, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. And Gretchen, excellent work as always. I'm a banker. I'm one of those little around-the-corner people who know this neighborhood mm-hmm. and the bankers. We didn't misbehave. We didn't lend money that shouldn't have been lent. But we are now using our tax dollars to prop up the banks that did this egregious business. And they shouldn't be rewarded. A lot of these banks that are out there that are taking this money aren't even American banks. We're donating to a cause that is just definitely not supportable. And who is hurting and who is suffering from this are bankers that behave themselves, consumers that work really hard. I'm watching the infrastructure of the American populace be destroyed by these banks, by these aggressive collection practices, by bad lending. I will hang up now for your comment. Once again, thank you for your help.
Terry, thank you very much for calling. Kevin Murphy, there's the banker around the corner who looks up at the mega banks and says, no thanks. It looks wrong to her.
I think it looks wrong to a lot of people. I think it's easy to channel our anger into looking at the big bonuses that the bankers are paid. But I will say that one of our problems is actually the word bonus. And which sounds to most people like that must be an unusual reward for unusual performance, as opposed to realizing that in many cases we're paying people below market base salaries, and the target bonus is a critical part of their competitive pay package.
But you call it a critical part of competitive pay package, and yet that's all part of a system that just imploded on us and cost the taxpayers an awful lot of money. I mean, that seems to me like pre-crash talk. Everybody just accepted that because the notion was this works, and it works for everybody. And now it's very, very, very clear that it did not.
At least according to Mr. Volcker. But again, there's
no, not just Mr. Volcker. Look around. Look at the losses the taxpayers have taken. Isn't that? I mean, that's just real.
But again, you're jumping to the conclusion that it must have been bonuses that caused it, or you're just maybe reacting to the fact that the executives got something that, after the fact, looks like it was unfair.
Well, but doesn't it point to systemic problems? I mean, it seems that the old justification that, you know, the system works, and so this is the way they're compensated, so let's not rock the boat. But the boat got sunk.
But let's think about how we are rocking the boat. The changes we've seen with some of these banks is they've dramatically increased the base salary and reduced the bonus opportunity. This is a short, wrong-headed move that is bad for shareholders in the long run.
Gretchen, do you see us moving toward a more sustainable system, you know, by hook and by crook, by Fed and Treasury and Congress and boards of directors and public pressure and guardians of compensation like Kevin Murphy? When you add it all up, do you see us getting onto a better track here or not?
I'm afraid I don't see us getting onto a better track yet. That doesn't mean that we won't get there, but I really don't think that we have been able to analyze what went wrong sufficiently. You know, Kevin talked a lot about a policy of home ownership in America, the rating agencies. There were missteps along the way, every step of the way. And until we get a very thorough, very hard-hitting investigation of what went wrong, I don't see how we can set ourselves right, because we'll be working with just assumptions and guesses rather than real factual, you know, discussion. We had that during the crisis that was in the 30s. We had an investigation that was incredibly well run by a prosecutor from New York, and we need that now.
But will we get that, Gretchen? Can we, if the big money is sort of back in the saddle, even with the tax support, you know, and pressuring Congress again?
Well, I would say that because so many in Congress understand that an investigation may lead to their door, I'm doubtful that we will get an in-depth one. But I'm still hopeful.
Fingers crossed.
I'm hoping.
Fingers crossed. Gretchen Morgenson, it's always great to have you with us.
Thank you.
With the New York Times, and Kevin Murphy at the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business. Thank you very much for joining us, Professor Murphy.
My pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.